It was one of these days I was talking about that, you know, we were lucky it was quite sunny and warm, and there was a minke whale that was coming up and breathing through kind of a small crack in the ice.
This is Jess Melbourne Thomas.
This huge thing was kind of just gently and slowly kind of sliding up through the crack to breathe out its blowhole. And it's quite a distinctive sound. I don't know if you've heard a whale blow through its blowhole, but
What does it sound like?
I can't make the noise. It was just incredible to be able to watch this, and we were all standing around watching and everyone was quite excited, and I managed to kind of step back and not look where I was going and step into a hole and just really quickly fell through a hole in the ice into the very cold water.
Oh, by the way, this is in Antarctica. Was it cold?
It was freezing. I was so embarrassed I'd fallen in. I didn't make any noise.
So wait,
It was
it was just kind of like a bed of ice that just.
a very thin bit of ice. I should have noticed, and I just stepped on it. But it was this really, you know, kind of striking contrast of the absolute beauty of that environment, but how quickly it can, if you're not careful, cause harm.
Jess first went to Antarctica about 3 years ago.
It was early spring, I think it was September or October time,
By boat.
in the Aurora Australis, which is the big orange Australian boat that goes to Antarctica at the moment.
It's a decent trip.
It was a transit over the Southern Ocean of about 7 days.
Although it's not always smooth sailing.
That part of the Southern Ocean is renowned for being pretty wild and very big seas. Depending on the trip, you can be lucky or unlucky in terms of how seasick people get.
When they first arrived,
You start to see icebergs, and I think it's tradition to run a bit of a betting on when the first iceberg will be sighted, and then from seeing the first iceberg, you start to see quite a lot more ice, and then you certainly do notice the change in temperature. It was very majestic, and the scales at which you can view the scenery and the size of the icebergs and the ocean vistas, and you start to see the wildlife, and you know, it's like nothing I'd ever experienced before. And my background as a marine scientist was working on tropical coral reefs, so it was really quite a contrast in terms of the environments that I was used to conducting science in, and really very striking.
So, yeah, this wasn't exactly a holiday for Jess. She was there as a research scientist representing the Australian Antarctic Division. And what really separated her work from, say, a tourist trip down to Antarctica was where they were.
The sea ice environment, I guess, is quite different from being on the continent itself.
A sea ice environment is pretty much that, big blocks of frozen water, which is different to that of inland Antarctica.
You're really walking amongst a landscape of contorted ice covered in snow, and some areas where it's, you know, really quite three-dimensional, and others where it's very large, flat expanses. There are a lot of penguins around.
And what was Jess doing?
So one of my jobs was to use I don't know how to describe it, like a big hollow drill.
Drilling down into the ice that had also swallowed her up at one point.
It would screw it down into the ice, and it would cut a circular core of ice. So about, I don't know, like 15 centimeter diameter core of ice, and then we would be able to pull that up out of the rest of the ice and chop it into bits and sample it for the things that it contained.
Things like phytoplankton. So phytoplankton are plants. They're microscopic little guys that are hugely important in the world's oceans. They provide something like 50% of the world's oxygen through photosynthesis. They're also a food source for bigger types of plankton, like zooplankton and krill too. These phytoplankton will lodge themselves into sheets of ice to grow. That's where they can get a lot of sunlight.
The underside of the ice is quite creviced, and if you're a krill or a zooplankton that's kind of a few centimetres or even smaller, then you can actually swim into those crevices and pick and scrape off the algae or phytoplankton that are growing against the ice.
But Jess wasn't there just to observe krill eating phytoplankton. She had bigger questions that needed answers. Questions that affect the entire planet.
If we have a better understanding of those finer scale processes, we can then make better predictions about the way that ecosystems might respond to climate change in the future. So if we see warming and a decrease in the availability of sea ice in winter, what effects might that have for the species that we're interested in?
Another part of Jess's role was as an ecosystem modeller. So she'd take data that she got from her research, input it into a computer, and model out a potential future for these environments.
The work that I was doing on that voyage, we melted the ice slowly in a dark room on the boat and in the cold. We didn't kind of just warm them up in the microwave. So once we'd warmed them up slowly, we filtered them through onto filter paper, and we could see that as like a brown mat. And that was what then goes into the machine that measures the densities.
By measuring their density, what does that tell you?
So that's telling you how much phytoplankton was in the column of ice that you sampled. So you can then figure out or make predictions about how much there might be at a larger scale beyond that core of ice that you sampled.
So what do some of these models that you're simulating say about the future of phytoplankton in these sea ice areas?
As is often the case when we talk about biology and ecology, that it's complicated. It may be that in some areas we see a little bit less productivity in the future associated with sea ice, but given the complex life cycles for animals like Antarctic krill that eat the phytoplankton and the different ways we talked about that they use that ice habitat, it might be that in some ways they benefit.
Do you mean in terms of for the krill, if the ice or the sea ice is melting, meaning there's less room for these phytoplankton to go, that the krill will be able to eat more and that they'll kind of flourish?
Yeah, partly. And also, if the water's warmer and the ice is a bit thinner, then it means that there's more light underneath the ice, you know, and light is what the phytoplankton need for photosynthesis to grow. And so it might be that there's slightly more algae in the areas that krill are using them for food, at least in the kind of the short to medium term.
Isn't that a concern to you, though, because if the krill are kind of getting more, just to simplify what we were saying, if the krill are getting more food, that's kind of throwing off a balance in the food chain. If there's so many krill eating so many phytoplankton, would it change up the food chain in its like natural cycle?
Yeah, it could do. And that's part of the reason that we use these computer models to look at different scenarios for how the effects that change might have in the food web and in the ecosystem more generally. It may just be that the extra productivity supports productivity at higher trophic levels. So penguins and seals and fish might do slightly better. But then there are these competing or conflicting effects of other changes in the environment. And it's about teasing out how those relative effects play out in overall change.
Why do we need to pay such close attention to what's happening in Antarctica?
Because of its large ice sheet, provides us with a very long historical record of changes in the environment and in carbon dioxide concentration and temperatures. And so it's been an important source of information in terms of understanding past and current change, because Antarctica is a place where there's no concentration of human populations. It helps us to be able to tease apart the effects of change in the environment, as opposed to the direct effect of humans. So we can kind of think of it as a little bit of the canary in the coal mine in terms of the way that the environment and ecosystems might be responding to climate change.
Meaning we're already seeing some bad things happening, so let's try not screw it up any worse.
Yeah.